It's a pleasure to be here. If I sound a little confused, the air is thinner here than it is in Dallas, Texas. And I haven't been long enough to acclimate. It's an honor and a privilege to be here with not only y'all, the panel as well. Shariki humbly understates the role that she's played nationally and internationally as it relates to childhood obesity, not only as an issue per se, but also an issue that is a manifestation of the inequity of social determinants of health and in our communities, in our states, in our nation, and frankly, in the whole world. Again, it's an honor to be here. I'm going to try to talk a little bit about the work of the Local Government Actions to Prevent Childhood Obesity Committee. The left clicker.
Just put it down. It needs to be in touch with something, I think.
Sorry. And I think what that says is that I work for Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Texas. That's my only stated conflict of interest. Bottom line, childhood obesity is a real issue. This slide is meant to remind us that along with it being a health issue and a economic competitiveness issue, for those of us who sometimes find ourselves talking to audiences who may not be as attuned to the health concerns or even the economic competitiveness concerns, national security is an issue that sometimes grabs people's attention. And here's a report that came out from an organization called Mission Readiness. If you're not aware of Mission Readiness, go look. It's a large organization of retired military. So these are not people who necessarily have exactly the same kind of pedigree that those of us in this room do, and they've come to the conclusion that we've got to do something about childhood obesity, and they've been testifying on the Hill in support of a number of pieces of legislation to address the issue of childhood obesity. Second point, it's really complicated. And I use this slide just to remind me of just how complicated it is. It's a busy slide. And too often, we reduce childhood obesity to energy in, energy out. And while that is the physiologic simple statement of why we are going in the direction that we're going, it's just way, way more complicated than that. Individual factors, behavioral factors, sectors of influence, norms and values, it's just really, really complicated. Even walking through the hallway here, we're at the American Public Health Association meeting, and the smell that I thought, isn't that a lovely smell, were the donuts. They just smell delicious, let's be honest. So it's really, really much more complicated than just what you eat and what calories you can burn. And so let me back up. Well, no, I'm not even going to try to back up because I probably can't. But one of the sectors of influence was government. It's one of many. And Shariki and I are serving on the Standing Committee to Prevent Childhood Obesity that's been commissioned by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And that committee has commissioned a number of smaller looks at what are some ways that we might address, or what are some areas around which we need a little bit more information. You're going to hear about two of those today, but we've looked at the role that the early years of childhood play in contributing to childhood obesity. We've looked at a number of different areas. This committee that I had the honor and privilege of chairing looked at local government actions to prevent childhood obesity. Let me say from the outset, one place that this committee did not look was in the school setting. So in the school, from let's say 8 o'clock in the morning to 3:30 in the afternoon, was an area we did not look at. And we did not look there because there's been a fair amount of work done there. I think everyone is pretty clear about what can be done in the schools, and I would say it's more a matter of political will and finding the funding than knowing what it is that we ought to be doing. So we were tasked with looking at what can happen at the local level. I'm not going to go into these statistics, you already know them. I think the number now is 17%, but The red is where I want to focus attention just for a moment, and that is that when we look at the general population, we sometimes forget, and maybe not folks in this room, but we have to remind ourselves that Latinos, African Americans, American Indians, and Pacific Islanders are disproportionately burdened with childhood obesity, and that the poor are disproportionately burdened with childhood obesity. We know the consequences. I don't need to spend a lot of time talking about this, except that when we talk about reducing life expectancy and we talk about the second bullet, more likely to develop hypertension, type 2 diabetes, and high cholesterol, let me say that a sub-bullet to that is while you're still a child. These are things that maybe are happening when you become an adult, but they are also beginning to be diagnosed in children. And unfortunately, one of the things that has happened, and I don't know if my good friend Dr. Joe Thompson is in here, but what's happened is that because of this, in my opinion, we're beginning to medicalize childhood obesity, and we're going to be spending resources testing young children for hypertension, type 2 diabetes, high cholesterol, and now fatty liver. And those are resources that we might ought to be using to prevent and reverse childhood obesity, because even after we find all of these things in children, the solution is what? More physical activity, a more balanced diet, so that a child can catch up and reduce the likelihood that he or she will become obese. Now, we looked at the role of local government. Local governments have, for a long time, been looking at issues that we might say are ones that are uniquely local government issues. They've been looking at issues that have either created healthy or not so healthy environments for our children. Zoning decisions that are made, decisions about sidewalks and roads. There is a role for stepping back and thinking, even if it's not a full-blown health impact assessment, thinking about the things that happen at the local government level that could be influenced in such a way that they might reduce childhood obesity. They've been experienced in promoting children's health, perhaps in ways that we haven't thought about. Local government, whether it's through the health department or not, has been involved, for example, with childhood immunizations. So it's not something that they're completely foreign to at the local level. And sometimes, and I'm looking at Dr. Valadez, sometimes decisions about mass immunization campaigns have to be taken considered in the context of the bigger city government as opposed to just the local health department. The methodology was looking at literature reviews, looking at actions that have been implemented by local governments and their partnering organizations. We looked at, we did analysis of evidence, and what you're going to hear later is what we found ourselves. There's a dearth of stuff out there, and we need to keep producing report on evaluation, report on some of the details of what we're doing, so we can build an evidence base. But we looked at these issues: evidence of effectiveness, size, outcomes and externalities, reach, impact, cost, and feasibility, and tried to come up with a list of things looking at these criteria. The interventions had to be within the jurisdiction of local government. They had to be likely to affect children directly, so that if there was a program that was targeting adults, for example, we didn't necessarily have a look at that. To changing the food or physical environment, physical activity environments outside the school walls, as I said earlier in the school day, actionable, and where the evidence was lacking or limited, and unfortunately, there's a lot of that, we tried to use a logical connection using a logic model between healthier eating, increased physical activity, and therefore the likelihood that you might reverse and or prevent childhood obesity. Bottom line conclusion we came to, children and parents need healthy environments to make healthy choices. The idea that it's just about personal responsibility, whether it's at a parental level or at a family level, doesn't take into account the disproportionate or the disparate conditions in which some folks find themselves in, and to just reduce it to what happens by personal choice is not really fair to those children or those parents. And that many children in America live in places where the unhealthy choice is the easy choice, whether it be that there's way more liquor stores than there are fruit stands, or however you want to characterize that, it's a real challenge to say you need to be more physically active and you need to eat better when the ability to do that can sometimes be a tremendous challenge. We did look at the issue of health equity, and I presume we understand what that is. And it's at the end of the day, the fair distribution of the health determinants, outcomes, and resources. So some things that we observed. This one thing is, this was an interesting committee. There's a couple of things that I want to make clear. We did not produce the usual IOM report. Here's our report, the whole report. And the writing is big enough that I can read it without my reading glasses. And if you know most IOM reports, they're not written that way. The audience is a little different. The audience for our report was local elected officials and people who are trying to influence what local elected officials are doing. And we wanted to write it in a way that would not be something that's really heavy and either holds down stacks of paper or holds up doors. We did have a couple of members who were elected officials. One a mayor of Somerville, and one was an elected official from a rural county in Montana. I apologize for my voice. Can't blame that on Denver. So some things that we concluded. One size does not fit all. We recommended 58 things to look at. But those 58 things to look at are a little bit like walking into a restaurant. And you got 58 choices, and you're obviously not going to choose all 58. But there are some that are going to be better choices than others for you at the moment. What works in Dallas, Texas, may not be what works in Seattle, may not be what works in Beeville, Texas, may not be what works in Somerville, Massachusetts. There were 58 action steps that we reported on, but we identified 12 that there was a fair degree of consensus were a little bit more recommendable than others. That's scientific terminology. I see Dr. Green back there, and I'm just feeling bad that I'm being so scientific here. We looked at two areas, the food environment, the physical activity environment. And these are among the 12 most promising. I'm going to go through those, and then I'll stop. The first bullet is the food oasis issue. How do we create food oases as opposed to food deserts? The second one, require menu labeling, we believe has been taken care of in the Affordable Care Act. Mandating and implementing strong nutrition standards for foods and beverages in government-run or regulated after-school programs. Really, the idea is there ought to be some regulations around foods served to children, period. Pretty much irrespective of the setting that they're in, if they're in MAS. One bullet, the first bullet on this one I think is really interesting, which is just the reminder that the best way to hydrate is water, and that finding water fountains these days in buildings can be a tremendous challenge. Let's put them back in buildings and have people be able to drink the best source of hydration. The most controversial point, I think, was the one about a tax strategy to discourage consumption of foods and beverages. And I've had to say over and over and over again, I work for an insurance company, that this was a committee, and B, this was one of 58 ideas, and ideas should not necessarily be just written off as completely untouchable, but really I believe this is an issue that ought to make its way to the debate table and then by consensus walked off the debate table. Let's put everything on the table that could potentially work and then convince ourselves of what can and can't. And then media campaigns. On the physical environment, communities where you can walk in or ride your bike, community policing strategies that improve safety and security of streets. We did find that there's some evidence that that is a workable solution. Safe routes to schools, parks and playgrounds that are safe and attractive, going back to bullet number two. The establishment of joint use of facilities agreements. There is a myth out there, and it's largely a myth, that schools can't be used after hours because of liability issues. And the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation funds an organization called NPLAN. I won't begin to try to spell out what the NPLAN stands for, but it provides assistance to communities to look at that issue and even some mock code enforcement laws, ordinance language. And then policies that mandate minimum play space, physical equipment, and duration of play in the in those same settings that we think there ought to be some regulation around foods. Obesity is a big problem. Local governments can play a role. They have played a role. Some are doing more than others. Local officials can enhance or hinder health. Local officials have the power to take steps. And we believe that this document is one tool that can be used at the local level, and we would encourage you to use it. I think there is a slide with references. I did not want to bring boxes of stuff. And so in the spirit of being honoring our planet, here's some websites where you can get the brief and the report at no cost to you. Thank you very much.